This sermon was recorded at the worship service of the First Congregational Church of Albany, New York, with the church's pastor, Reverend James Eaton, preaching. The church worships at 10:30 every Sunday, and everyone is welcome. We're located at 405 Quail Street in Albany, New York. For more information, go to our church website at albanyfirstcongregational.org. Thanks for listening. May you find a blessing today.
Pray with me and for me. O Lord, on this beautiful sunny day, gather here hoping to hear the whisper of your Spirit in our heart and the power of your word in our mind. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, who alone is our rock and redeemer. What's mine? What's yours? What's mine? What's yours? Everything has a tag on it, doesn't it? It says who it belongs to. Sometimes we're aware of these things, sometimes we're not. If you've ever been through the process of breaking up a home, you know what I mean. If you've been through a breakup with a loved one, if you've been part of dealing with things after someone has died, you know that everything evokes a person. What's mine? What's yours? There's a moment in the movie When Harry Met Sally, when Harry's very bitter about the breakup. And he says to someone, always remember to write your name in your books, because someday there will be a day when you'll be standing there with some book and saying, is this yours or mine? And she'll be saying, oh, that's mine, when you know it's yours. What's mine? What's yours? We don't always see the tags, but they're there. In our home, some of you know, you've been there. There's a large collection of yadros. Yadros are porcelain statues made in Spain. And most of them are young women holding flowers and things like that. But, and those belong to Jacqueline. There's a little invisible tag on them that says Jacqueline. They're not mine. But there's one that's an old sea captain with a boy on his lap. Jacqueline gave it to me long, long ago. And that's mine. That's not Jacqueline's. Doesn't have a tag on it, but I know that's mine. So does the rest of the family. What's mine? What's yours? That question can reduce us, can't it? I remember many years ago when I was separating from my first wife, standing in a kitchen arguing over silverware. It wasn't even real silver, it was just stainless steel. It was stuff we had bought, but we were mad and we were fighting, and we were fighting over who got the silverware. Whose was it? What's mine? What's yours? In the Bible, there are all kinds of responses to this question. One of my favorites is in Psalm 22. It says, don't move the ancient boundary stone set up by your ancestors. Now, I worked for a short time in college on a survey crew, and I know something about boundary stones. Every piece of property has boundary markers. And you see what this means? You don't make rules unless somebody's violating them. Somebody has been out there moving the boundary stones. Well, mine? What's yours? Somebody's been out there trying to increase what's theirs. King Ahab gets in trouble over the question of what's mine and what's yours, and so does King David. And I'm sure everyone here has a story about it. What's yours? What's mine? And then this question. What's God's? What's God's? That's the issue Jesus raises in the story that we read today. He's there in a very public place. This is what you have to remember about all these stories, is that they don't take place in an office somewhere. This is not a few people talking together just off in a private place. This is in a crowded public place. So you have to imagine this as taking place during the Christmas season in the mall, for example, or something like that. There are crowds of people around. Some of them support Jesus, some of them oppose him. And these people are trying to get him to say something, trap him into saying something that will get him arrested. So they come to him and they say with honeyed words, "Good teacher, we know that you are sincere." Which is kind of a joke, since he immediately calls them hypocrites, which they are. And they ask him about this tax. A number of years before this, the Romans had conquered the land, and like all conquerors, they wanted to get back their investments. So they had created a poll tax. Poll tax means that everybody had to pay this tax. In a few weeks, we're going to hear more about this tax, because it is in order to register for the tax that Mary and Joseph are going to Bethlehem. So everybody has to pay this tax. And you have to pay this tax with a particular coin, a denarius, a Roman coin. And on one side of this coin is a picture of the emperor, which would be Tiberius in this moment. And on the other side of the coin is an inscription calling him a god. Now, the Torah says not to have any images of other gods. So to just possess the coin is a moral problem for Jews. And then there's the question of what to do about paying the tax. You can't pay the tax if you don't have the coin. If you have the coin, you're in violation of God's rules. If you don't have the coin and you don't pay the tax, the Romans will kill you. So it's a problem. And now they've set this trap for Jesus. Because when they ask, is it lawful to pay this tax? He says, no. He'll be arrested and branded an outlaw, though a popular one. No one likes taxes. And this tax was particularly hated. It's the answer all his followers want. Think how wonderful it would be if part of being a Christian meant you don't pay your income tax. If, on the other hand, he says, yes, pay the tax, he'll be seen as a coward who compromises with power, afraid of the Romans, and he'll lose the faith of his followers. This is an important question. Now there's quiet as the question hangs in the air, a moment before while he thinks, and then his answer, which obviously surprises them, show me the coin. One of them pulls it out, which shows that he's already violating Torah. And he looks at it, and turns it over and says, whose image is on the coin? Everyone knows that. Caesar, the emperor. And finally, his answer, then give Caesar what is Caesar's, and render to God what is God's. What's God's? What belongs to God? Early in the history of the church, a great theologian recognized that since we bear the image of God, just as the coin bore the image of the emperor, we are gods. That's what Jesus means. The coin bears Caesar's image. We belong to God. The earth is the Lord's and all that is in it, the world and those who live in it, Psalm 24 says. So the question of what is yours has a surprising answer. What is yours isn't really yours. All those Yadros, they don't really belong to Jackboard. Wait, that means my Yadro doesn't really belong to me, doesn't it? All that stuff you think is yours, if you belong to God, that belongs to God's too. What's yours? What's God's? All of creation, including you, including everything you are, that we are, everything we own, everything we do is meant to be a part of God. And that leads to living as good stewards. What is a steward? A steward is somebody who's given charge over something, who's told, here, you can use this, but take care of it. You can use it, but take care of it. Everything we are, everything we own, everything we do is meant to be part of our stewardship. We are God's, and one of the ways that we express this is by living with a consciousness that what we have as God's stewards. We are God's, and one of the ways we express it is through using what we have and what we are, doing the work of God and God's church. Everything that happens here is enabled by our giving something. Let me say that again. All the ministries of this church are enabled by our giving. Nothing happens here. Nothing can happen here unless someone does something, gives something. I think we forget that principle sometimes. We kind of take things for granted. We assume that the pew will be there, that the pulpit will be there. We figure that it will all just happen. We're like the waiter a friend of mine met in the South. She never had grits. But of course, in the South, grits always come with breakfast, whether you want them or not. So after a few days of getting grits, she said to a waiter, "What exactly are grits?" And he said, "Well, ma'am, grits is grits." So trying to make herself clear, she said, "Well, okay, where do grits come from?" He thought for a moment, and then he said, "Grits come from the kitchen." I think we treat this the same way. But you know, there's no ministry here that happens without somebody doing something, without somebody giving some gift. A year or so ago, maybe more, I don't know, one of our members came to the Board of Deacons and said, "You know, I've been around and I've seen these little free libraries in front of some places, places where we put out books and people take them. Sometimes they bring books back. Couldn't we have something like that by the bus stop out here?" So the deacons and later the trustees talked about this and we kind of thought about it. It took us a while. But eventually, we decided this was a great idea. What a great thing to come to a bus stop and discover that there's free books. So we found somebody in our congregation, Barry, who has the skill of woodwork, and he built us a little library box, and you can see it out there today. But you know, that little library box would be empty, and it wouldn't work, except that Linda goes out periodically, every few days, and puts out books in it. Now, the other day, I was outside, and I'm enjoying the sunshine, and I saw a little family standing there. One of the things we do is to put out children's books, and there was a little girl, and she was saying to her mom, "Come on, Mom, come on, Mom, hurry up, hurry up." And in that way of a weary mother, she kept saying, "I'm coming, I'm coming." I thought maybe the little girl was worried about missing the bus. That wasn't it. That little girl got to that box, that library out here, and she's too small to reach it. So she's standing there jumping up to see what's in the box. Now, that box would not be there. That box would not have books unless somebody had donated some books, somebody else had built the box, and then put the books out there. And all of that enabled that moment of joy. And I'm telling you that every time a little girl laughs and smiles. God smiles. Every Sunday we come here and we share in listening to the, getting the inspiration of the choir's music. Now, I was saying to my family on the way here this morning, there's an old congregational tradition before we had organs and choirs and all of this, where the minister would line out the song. That means that the minister would sing a line of a hymn or song, and then the congregation would have to sing it back. Now, some of you have stood next to me when I'm singing, or been around when I'm singing, and you know how awful this would be. So thank God for the choir, and the organist, and the people who have the gift of music. Because they come and share that gift, we have that inspiration. A while ago, Jack once decided that we needed to take the wonderful welcome of this church and greeting outside the doors on nice days. So she started sitting outside. By the way, you can join in this if you want to, any single Sunday. So we started getting some donuts, and then later we discovered we needed dog treats also. Not quite sure why we're not really set up for the worship space for dogs, but we welcome them anyway. And so every Sunday she goes out and gives that gift on behalf of our whole congregation. I could just go on and on and on and on. You know, when you leave today, take a look. On the side of almost every single pew, there's a plaque. That pew you sat in, it did not magically appear. It was not created de novo from nothing. Somebody gave that pew so you could come and sit and worship. Every single thing comes from someone's determination to live as a good steward and to give a gift. Everything comes from somewhere, and all of the activities of this church do not come from the kitchen. They come from us. From each one of us. They come from our answer to the question, what is God's? Notice I didn't say they come from the answer, what should I give? That's the wrong question. Giving here isn't a donation to a cause or an organization. We don't want what's yours. Let me say that again. We don't want what's yours. No. What makes this place go is when someone recognizes that they belong to God and decides to use what God's given them for God's purpose. Could be a talent. We need the gifts and talents of every person. We have some people with great musical talents. We have bakers, people who are great at greeting. We have painters and photographers and people who just come and appreciate it all. Cooks and teachers and people who know how to organize a work party. What makes all those go together, what blends it like a good cook, making a wonderful stew, is the Spirit of God and the open-hearted recognition that we belong to God. And everything we have, everything we are, belongs to God. Now, part of that is money. What is money? It's really kind of a battery. You know, it's a stored up energy. It's something that you went somewhere and earned. It's an ability to get something done. What happens when you give the church a dollar? Nothing miraculous. We buy stuff and we pay people. Some of it buys paper. Some buys toner. We use that to turn out the bulletin that you hold in your hands every Sunday. Some of it pays me because you pay me. I'm available when someone needs a visit in the hospital, when a funeral is needed, when you need a calm, thoughtful person to talk to. A good deal of it allows us to plan and do worship. And another good part of it pays to make sure that this beautiful historic building is maintained and heated and so on. Now, none of that's a miracle, is it? Pretty straightforward. But what's truly miraculous is what comes out of that process. When we respond by giving freely and joyfully all of our gifts, all of our talents, when we think about those as God's, then God takes that and inspires it and works in it. So the sermon and the singing becomes worship. The teams meet and a potluck dinner gets planned quilt gets made. People learn about the Bible. Children grow up feeling welcome. Others come here and have wounds healed. You know, this place, this home of ours, this building, just bursts with people. And every single one of them says the same thing. I can't believe that you welcome people like this. I think in the last century or two, the greatest darkness of the church has been its failure to welcome people. And there's so many people with injuries and wounds out there because they haven't been welcomed. We're healing people every single day. People that may not come to worship, but come to church and are able to come to church because of the stewardship of each one of us. It doesn't come from the kitchen. It comes from our hearts. Start with the idea that it all belongs to God. Start with the idea that you belong to God. You discover a living treasure. A living treasure. Give God what is God's. That's what Jesus said to the Pharisees and the disciples, and it's what he says to us today. Give God what is God's, and what is God's? You, me. We are God's living treasure if we will faithfully, prayerfully, hopefully give God what is God's. I know that God will work with it. Like a baker making bread, that God's Spirit will come into it like yeast. And raise it up until all God's children are fed and realize the wonderful love of God. Amen. Amen.